producers. Featuring the most respected international talent in the world of audio production and voiceover. Radio, TV, film, and online. In-depth interviews, industry insights, putting you on the inside. This is the Producers Podcast with Ryan Dreen.
And welcome to it, Producers Podcast. Thank you so much for checking out another episode. I actually have quite a bit in the works. I have at least three that I can tell you for sure are going to happen in the near future. But really, especially in the last couple months after traveling over to Europe for the big imaging, the big imaging conference over there in Amsterdam. I also went over to London, met a few other people there. I could say literally there are at least seven interviews I want to do right now. And I just, you know, can't do that many at one time. So there's lots coming down the pike, as it were. I'll tell you for sure, I believe next will be Jason Garte. You know what? I've never actually heard his last name spoken. I talked to him briefly. And anyway, Garte, president of the Mix Group, well-known in the imaging community and is making lots of noise with the Mix Group. Some huge names, big-time talent being repped over there. And just seems like a very well-connected guy, talented, but also, you know, he's going to be exciting. I have a feeling he's not going to sit there quietly and answer in one-word answers. That's what I'm guessing. So anyway, Jason should be coming up next. Going to do an interview at some point with Anthony Gay because we exchanged some emails here and there, and I've known his work for a while. Music director, Real World Europe. And so that will definitely happen, but that one will be a little bit later. But another guy who I might slide in after Jason, it really depends. His schedule is awfully busy as well. But a really talented voiceover artist, Mike Kaminsky. Just go to his website, mikekaminsky.com, and just check out some of his work. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised if you have not heard of him. If you have, well, then you know why I'm going to interview him, because he's a big-time talent. So anyway, that's kind of the upcoming stuff. I'm not going to really hype or promote anything else at this point. I'll round out the episode by, just saying quickly goodbye, but nothing major there. So really, listen to the one-parter here. Steve Dubbs is the guy who I will be interviewing. Steve Dubbs. I actually go through all of his titles, just various titles. I'll say one thing I've become savvy to working on a lot of different sides of the radio imaging and branding world, especially as I'm getting a little bit more connected to folks around the globe. There are those that are obviously, you know, working professionals and they're doing pretty good. There are those that are really good at telling you how big they are, but maybe they don't have their hands in that much stuff. Steve Dubbs is the opposite of that. He's being utilized around the country and now around, well, not now, for years, around the world. But as far as urban imaging goes, I think you have to put him in the very top of the heap. And really, the more people I talk to, as far as just imaging in general, a lot of people have him in their top five list. And there are a lot of major stations that are utilizing Steve's services. So I sort of bumped him up the list here because I think he's an important talent to talk to. And I think the interview went very well. He's very grounded. He has a very good assessment of what he does, you know, his value. But also, he's just working all the time. It's really just sick. So before I go on and on and on, let's hear, I'm just going to play a part of his urban demo because that's kind of his bread and butter. Although you can check out Urban CHR and his voiceover demos on my website. There is a show notes page, as almost always there is. RyanOnTheRadio.com. Click on the Steve Dubbs link or do a search and you can hear his demos in their entirety. But for right now, let's hear some of the goodness that is Steve Dubbs.
Denial Productions.
Urban.
I'm gonna make it back.
Live from the Young Money Cash Money Business Studios.
Rolling with 10 joints in a row on the beat.
Right now.
Rubber band money. Bounce it off the wall.
Child support with 50 stacks. You can do whatever you want.
What's your name?
The all new 93.7 The Beat.
You know I'm all about
banging hip hop.
Hit me.
Rolling 10 joints in a row.
Mic check 1 2 1 2.
You are now tuned into the world famous 107.5 WGCI FM Chicago.
The Shy's number one for hip hop and R&B.
103.5 The Beat.
Bump it.
Hit him with the
banging hip hop.
Hip hop
and R&B. H-Town.
We don't go back. Right about now.
Key and DJ Steve Nice.
DJ, turn it up.
Starts now.
The all new 93.7 The Beat.
What's your name?
GCI, baby.
What's up?
Rolling 10 joints in a row.
It's Nicki Minaj.
J. Cole.
Rosé. Turn up.
Hip hop and R&B joints. Commercial free. Check us out now at power99.com.
And here we are, Steve Dubs, Urban Imaging Director. In fact, Steve, I'm reading your, the signature, which has 100 words about what you do.
Yeah, the longest title ever, right?
Right. Urban Imaging Director, National Program Platforms, Creative Services Director, Miami, Fort Lauderdale, iHeart Media, and that has not touched on the real world work that you do as well. I believe you are the Urban Director at Real World also?
Yes, the Urban Format Director for
Urban
Production
Format.
Vault Urban, yeah.
Or Production Vault Urban. Great. Anyway, Steve Dubs is the guest. Steve, man, thank you so much for the time because I absolutely know how tight your schedule is. Appreciate you coming on.
Of course, man. I appreciate you having me. I'm very honored to be a part of this platform here.
Yeah, I've gotten to the point where I've done so many that even if I'm a tool, even if I'm worth, it doesn't matter. Now I've had so many huge names on this thing. People have to say that to me, but you're kind to do so.
That's
funny. So, most people would know you as kind of the urban guy, of, if not the top urban imaging producers in the entire United States of the America. And then now really we're talking on an international scale. I like to just dive in, and sometimes I advance past this, but what originally got you started producing urban radio imaging?
Well, I've just always, it's weird being a white kid from upstate New York. I don't know why, but since I can remember, I've just always been hardcore into hip hop and into the music.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to college, and my mom was kind of bugging me to stop partying and pick up some extracurriculars. A friend of mine was doing a college radio station. So sophomore year of college, I kind of just tagged along with him. And he had a hip-hop show. And from there, I started teaching myself Pro Tools and listening to local radio in Connecticut and in New York City and stuff. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know. It resonated with me and the whole just aspect of imaging and how it was just the backbone of the radio station. And this was back in the late 90s when, now it's a kind of a different beast. But back then, just hearing, the deep voices of Dr. Dave and Pat Garrett and Jim Snowden and those kind of legends just really got me into and mixing that with the hip hop culture was just, I don't know. It was just that it started there and took off.
So real quick, where'd you go to college?
I went to Quinnipiac University right outside New Haven, Connecticut.
Sure. Was it a solid learning experience, like a good college station there? Or was it more of a, they just kind of let the kids get in there and do what they want and you had, just rate the experience of that?
Well, there was station managers, there was a program director, and there was music directors for each format, because obviously college radio is pretty open format, depending on, time slots and whatnot. But it's funny, because it's a huge communication school, and hopefully, 15 years later or whatever, it's better now. But back then, they didn't, there was still reel-to-reels, and they're, teaching you how to do carts and splice up tape. And this was when, digital age just kind of started to get into it. So I actually taught myself Pro Tools and ended up teaching our professor in a class of, Radio 101, the system, which was kind of funny. But as far as the station was concerned, it was pretty structured, but you got to do your thing as long as you just weren't an idiot on the air. And from there, I kind of, I learned things pretty quickly. And after a year, I became the production director of the station.
And you say you're talking Pro Tools at an extremely early age here, it sounds like. What year did you start with Pro Tools? And have you ever strayed, or have you been a Pro Tools guy the whole time?
I've strayed and unfortunately have never gone back, which I'm in crisis mode right now. So I 99 was when I started with Pro Tools, and when I graduated college and got my first job in 2002, the company I worked for did not have Pro Tools. They had the beautiful Saw Studio or Saw 32.
Ooh.
Or Saw Plus.
Yeah.
So I had to adapt, and that was a big learning curve for me to change, because I had been on, and I didn't know at the time, I didn't know anything besides Pro Tools even existed, because I'm not a super techie dude. It's just, mm-hmm. I learn what I learn and I go based off of that. But yeah, I had to use Saw 32, and after just using that for a few years, I just realized it's kind of all this, you know, to me a DOS system is a DOS system, it's more the producer. So I just, unfortunately, I say unfortunately because now in 2014, I'm still using Saw Studio.
Oh, you're one of, wow, I think you're maybe the third now. I know that I was surprised when Kelly said,
yeah.
You know, and I think there was somebody else that I'm forgetting, but you can't be more than the third person I've met who's still using Saw.
I think the only other person is Bob Lentini, who created the program. I think that's all that's left right now. But, and it's crazy to me. And you know, I just had this conversation with someone at Real World the other day because they're pushing me to get on Pro Tools, and I want to. It's just, you know, jumping ship and completely starting from scratch is just, who has the time for that? So it's kind of, it's more of a scary thing for me than anything. But yeah. I know that Saw is eventually just going to stop working. You know, there's no way it can be, you know, formatted to work with the next Windows 8 and Windows 9 and all this stuff. So now's the time I actually started doing some hardcore tutorials on Pro Tools the past few months. And my goal is by 2015 at some point to be fully switched over.
I mean, like you said, you know, DAWs are DAWs. I mean, generally speaking, you're moving audio around a multi-track system, and you really just have to kind of learn the, well, shortcuts, you know, keyboard commands, those kinds of things. You know, but I did the same thing. You know, I was on Cool Edit and then Audition for a long time. And when I came to Dallas, it was Pro Tools and only Pro Tools. And, you know, when I took the job, they're like, you know, are you familiar with Pro Tools? I'm like, yeah, sure, of course I am. I've got Pro Tools in my studio here. I had literally never opened it. But, you know, it took... Like, you have to just force yourself, I think. You just have to say, okay, the Band-Aid's getting yanked. Let's do this today. And if you do that, I mean, it could be hours and you'll be fully into it, you know?
And that's literally what it is, too. It's a matter of just doing it. I've given myself every excuse in the world where, oh, I just don't have time. This and that. You know, I have an 8-month-old baby at home now, so time is even, you know, less free time is even, you know, less of a luxury. But now I'm kind of getting nervous about what the future holds, and I can't get, you know, one day all of a sudden, oh, my program doesn't work anymore because they haven't made it since 2005. So
I mean, well, it's certainly, you can never expect software to keep lasting, you know. I mean, they've already got Windows 10, the preview edition out there.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, they're... Yeah. Well, I think it'd be better for you to do it on your own terms. It's kind of like, you know, would you rather find your own next job or be fired and forced to find your own next job? You know, everyone's going to take option A. But anyway, that's cool to hear. I'll just say, I know you're going to love Pro Tools when you go over there, but you've already heard that from all the Real World guys and everybody.
Oh,
so,
yes.
Speaking of the Real World guys, I did want to mention, you know, we were talking before this little show here. I got to hang out with, you know, what feels like the entire team over in Europe. And they were really kind, invited me to dinner. They had really, really nice things to say about you, which is one of the reasons I jumped onto this interview. Like, I bumped you way up the list, and I didn't let you push it off for contractor reasons or anything, you know? I wanted to jump in here. But they had great things to say about you, and a lot of people, as far as Urban Imaging goes, and that on that national, now international platform, you know, when they talk Urban Imaging and even just kind of imaging in general, as far as Americans, you're up there in the, well, let's just say top five. You know, what do you feel about that? Does that really mean anything to you? Or does it just kind of like, oh, that's nice, but I'm just going to do my thing?
I mean, yes and no. It's definitely humbling. And
do you think I'm correct? Do you agree with that statement that you're probably in the top five of imaging talent in the States?
I mean, without sounding conceited or cocky, I mean, yeah, I would agree with that because I'm very confident in what I do. And I put a lot of effort and a lot of time into, you know, I started in a very small market, and now here I am, the head of Urban Imaging for Clear Channel, a.k.a. iHeartMedia.
Yeah.
You know, and I have stations, and now with Production Vault Urban, you know, I'm handling over 100 stations worldwide, which, you know, going from one little small urban station in market 60-something to now on this level, it's crazy to me. So it's, you know, hard work paid off. So I'd like to accept that I'm definitely up there. And, you know, there's some people that have helped me along the way and some inspirations here and there. But at this point, it's nice to be considered that and to, you know, be held in such a high regard.
So getting onto that path, You know, I mean, I was pretty blown away. You know, I know what people in our business do, you know, generally speaking, but some of the intricacies that go into the production and the elements that are produced and the way that the overall sound of imaging is made, you know, seeing Andy Jackson, for example, see what he puts in to a 5 or 6 second sweeper, and you're doing some of that too. As far as tools used to learn, what are some of the biggest things that helped you with your proficiency in production over the years?
Honestly, I would say I would just listen to other producers and try and emulate their work. And that's how I grew and learned to, you know, I feel like a lot of producers get trapped in a bubble because they're just constantly doing the same thing over and over again. And they're not really branching out and listening to what's going on in other markets and with other producers. So, I mean, when I was in Albany, New York, I was listening to Power 105 in New York City a lot, and Kwasi Hewlett, who is still there, he was, you know, the way he was doing a lot of the imaging just kind of inspired me, and you know, a ton of artist integration, and then on the same level with John Frost when he launched The Breaks. Premiere, just those two things, I kind of just was really, I don't know, they just kind of blew me away because it was so different than what was normally going on in the cookie cutter world of radio imaging, and especially urban radio, because I feel like it's so unique where I don't use a lot of, at this point, a lot of image VO. It's 95% artist and acapella samples.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's what really tells the story and resonates with an urban audience.
Let me ask you this. Excuse me. As far as urban radio goes, or urban radio imaging, tell me the best thing about it. Pardon me. Tell me the best thing about the imaging in general for urban radio, and then tell me the worst thing.
The best thing, I guess, for me is just the fact that it's every day I get to play within a music genre that I truly enjoy and love. You know, I've been forced to do some other formats. I mean, I do a lot of top 40 and I enjoy that as well.
Yeah.
But I've been forced to do some rock here or there, a country, and it's in hot AC, and it's just, no offense to that, but it's just not me and it's not who I am. So I have a hard time really getting passionate and getting behind it. But with urban, I kind of just... I get lost in it sometimes, and like I said, being able to just have and being in a market like this in Miami, where we have every artist, you know, you could think of constantly coming through on a weekly basis and sitting in my studio and recording a few pages with me, and you know, that's stuff that I'll hold on to forever and can always recycle and use, and being able to just break down the music and the lyrics and acapellas, and I don't know, I just really get off on that. It's just, you know, it's so in the culture, and the fact that it can translate into radio imaging as well, and you know, kind of tell a story with it. To me, that's, you know, it's high energy. It's never really a dull moment. It's just, it's go go go, and I don't know. That's what really gets me going on that side.
And then give me something maybe people wouldn't know, but working in the urban format that you don't like, some negative aspect of it.
I wouldn't even say it's necessarily the urban format as so much as it's everything I'm noticing these days is very last minute and I need this right now, which I guess it's always kind of been like that to some extent in radio, but more so than ever. I mean, you know, I was just having this conversation with someone the other day because, you know, we were talking about a station in Orlando that we launched a few months back. And, you know, they were kind of asking the history behind that. And I literally got a phone call from Doc Winter, who's the SVP of urban programming, at 3 p.m. on like a Tuesday or something. And they wanted to launch the station at 8 a.m. the next morning. So I did a complete station launch in, you know, 6 hours.
Wow.
You know, so I see that kind of thing happening more and more often, which is obviously super stressful and crazy. And that I guess that would be my biggest complaint is that things are very, very rushed and very, you know, instant gratification, which I guess is just the business. So it is what it is. But, you know.
Yeah, well, I suppose the expectation is that we can turn on a dime and we should be able to turn on a dime. And also, I've touched on this in the past, but if you're not the guy who can turn on a dime, then they're going to find the guy who can, right?
Exactly.
So I want to get back a little bit. You had talked about how you listened to other producers and other stations and brands, you know, The Breaks and Power, and you maybe listened to others. But one thing I've always had is, without being able to literally stand behind a producer or, you know, just a talent on the board or on, you know, in the box working and see exactly how they do something, sometimes it's hard for me to emulate. So I guess, do you have you had other tips, tricks, techniques on where you were able to figure out how to do very specific things, or any other advice on how people can learn the tools of our trade without actually being there and watching a John Frost do his thing?
Well, yeah, and that's funny because I actually have never sat in a studio with any of these guys and just, you know, gotten a play-by-play of what they're doing, okay, and you know, breaking down a mm-hmm. session, and this is how you do this and this and this. It honestly, and just all is by sound. I've just listening to guys over the years and, you know, people like Eric Chase, I would just literally try and, okay, well, how the hell did he do that? And I would, if I needed to, and here's one thing that I think a lot of people don't do is, you know, I didn't hesitate to reach out and be like, hey, dude, you know, I heard this element, and I would send him the piece. What's this effect that you're using here, and what is that? And that's kind of how I got, you know, away from standard plugins that come with a system, and I upgraded to Waves and, you know, speakerphone and stuff like that.
Sure.
But I've kind of been like that my whole life where, you know, when I was a child, I took piano lessons like a lot of kids, you know, do an instrument growing up. But I had an issue reading the music. But if the teacher would just play it, I would be able to play it back to her, which was kind of crazy to me. So I guess that's I'm kind of the same way with imaging. It's just if I hear it, I'll try and dissect it and figure out how it was done and just go 100% by sound.
You actually brought this up. I was going to bring it up in a minute, but. You know, you got into the Waves plugins. It's probably, you know what, 90% of us, when we eventually do that, we feel like we've reached another level.
Yes.
If I gave you one, you're on a desert island, your one desert island plugin, if you had to pick one for you, what is it?
Like one plugin within all of
Yes, out
waves
of every plugin.
Oh my goodness.
Out of every, not just Waves, every plugin, you get one.
It would be... I'm very big on clean, crisp breakthrough audio, and I love EQs. So I think it would be Audio Track EQ.
Oh, Audio Track EQ. Cool.
Yeah, I don't know why. It's just something. And I mean, obviously, there's other things that go into it with adding, you know, limiters and compression and this and that. But just the I don't know. It's just always was a crisp sound that I really. It really stuck with me, and if I had to choose one thing, I guess that's it. I mean, but what the hell can you do with just one thing?
No, I know. It's really a dumb question, but it does get some insight. You know, I mean, if you're saying a compressor, you know, you kind of, you know, you're leaning in that realm. Some people have said, you know, delays, whatever. Anyway, it's good to know. Why don't we keep on the tools? We've already kind of learned a little bit about how you learn. What are some of the other tools you use regularly in your studio? And do you work, you know, 100% in the box? Do you have any outboard gear you mix with? What all are you got going in your chain?
Honestly, I really don't. I mean, I know there's a lot of guys that, you know, have MIDIs out there, and especially, you know, on the real world side with Production Vault, they're producing their own music half the time when they're producing these sweepers and promos, which is crazy to me. I wish I could get into that kind of stuff. I don't. I'm pretty simple. Like I was saying before, I'm not, and it shocks a lot of people, I'm not the techiest person. I'll have conversations with other imagers, and they're just going on and on about bussing this and patching this. And and I kind of get lost sometimes because I was one of those guys that would sit down and I would teach myself, okay, well, what is this? You know, the first time I ever used a C1 compression, I'm like, oh, what the hell does this do? And then I would just play around with it. And after years and years of whatever, I would just start to understand what all these different presets and plugins do and create my own little presets and toy around within that. But I'm looking at my studio, I'm looking around, and I have nothing here. I have a MIDI keyboard that's not even plugged in. And I mean, rest is just my board and my software.
And, you know, in the box, I mean, in your software, you've probably got a pretty massive Waves bundle because you already mentioned Waves and you have the resources.
Yeah, I'm on Waves Mercury actually at this point.
Great. Do you have anything else? I mean, do you use any SSL or McDSP or Universal Audio or any of that stuff?
A big thing I like is Isotope Ozone.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And I use it in a different way than a lot of people. And the imaging director that hired me down here in Miami back in 2005, Jake Redman, who's at Sirius now.
I know Jake. Yeah, he's awesome.
Jake? Good dude.
Yes.
Yeah, he turned me on to Isotope Ozone in the sense where he was bussing it down to his master track. So everything he mixed down was running through that. And it just, it gave everything this, I don't know, just this crisp, boosted sound. It completely transformed my sessions from sounding kind of flat to really sounding like a fully mastered song. You know, if you can compare the difference.
Did you just say you put that as the final element on your master? Is that basically what you're doing?
Yeah, I do. I bus everything to a master track that has Isotope Ozone on there. And
I was going to add, actually, it's literally the next thing written on my list here is it was funny in that in the imaging days, it ended up being almost like the funny, weird side joke, but everybody wanted to know everybody's master chain. So, and some people were like, I'm not showing you my master. Show me your master. Anyway, you obviously just said you run through Ozone. Do you put anything else on the master, or do you do everything else in the mix, or how are you running that?
Honestly, yeah, and I kind of do things a little bit ass backwards sometimes too, but I really don't. That's it. Sometimes I'll, if I mix something down, I'll add some, like an L3 to it.
Yeah.
Or, just to really boost it up. And, it really depends on what I'm producing, I guess, whether I'm producing something that's just musically intensive or if it's, if it's a bit in the writing, I want the writing to shine where there's not really a lot of production behind it. But I want to just make sure that the final product is just really, booming out there. But yeah, I'm pretty simple, man. It's Isotope Ozone, and then within my session, I have different templates depending on what voice talent I'm using and what format I'm producing. But I pretty much have everything laid out per track. I don't have a ton of buses going from channel to channel. That's just sure. It's something I never really got into, and no fault to anyone that does, because I know that is like a science, and I'm amazed by it as well. But it's just not something that I never really stuck with me.
I just imagine people working within Pro Tools, but you're working within SAW. So do you think SAW is limited in that way? Is it just easier to, I know nothing about it, I'll be honest. Is it easier to just run everything track by track?
I don't know if it's necessarily easier or if it's just my lack of knowledge.
It's just the way you go.
To be honest,
it's the way you do things.
It's just the way I did things and the way I've kind of always, and I've tried to never really get stuck too much in one spot, because I feel like that's where you kind of just fall off the map and you're become irrelevant if you don't continue to grow.
Yeah.
But one thing that's kind of, hasn't changed is that, I never, I don't know if it's SAW or if it's just me, but, that's where I am.
A little bit about your workload. I listed your, sort of your current resume, and there's about 7 jobs you're doing. I mean, literally, 4 or 5 people at least could be doing what you're doing. Anyway, your workload day to day, give us a little idea. How much are you doing for local stations, for other U.S. stations, and then for the national service, and then anything else you're doing?
Yeah, workload is pretty intense. I'm not going to lie there, and people are always asking how the hell do you do that? Why are you taking on more clients? But I'm kind of one of those people that just, I don't want to say no to certain projects because I don't. Mm-hmm. I just want to continue to grow. But right now I'm the imaging director for, we have the Beat in Miami, Y100, which is, obviously a legendary CHR, and then our Hot AC down here. So those are the 3 stations in my cluster that I'm responsible for locally.
Do you do 100% of the imaging on all 3, or do you have some sort of assistants or other imagers with you on those 3?
Nope, 100%. All me.
Okay. Because that's the new reality. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's been like that, for here. But, the thing I've seen over the years, which goes into my workload, is less and less markets have in-house imaging guys. So, not only am I handling these 3, but I'm doing KISS FM in Chicago. I'm doing GCI in Chicago. I'm doing Power in Philly. I'm doing The Beat in Houston. I'm doing Channel 955 in Detroit. It goes on and on with the amount of stations I'm handling. And I don't get fully involved with all of them as far as, in Miami, I do all of the writing and producing and whatnot. Anything outside the market, I try and just stick to production just because writing is a whole nother element of just time consumption.
I would say it takes at least, a factor of 2 or 3 to the actual production if done right.
It depends on what you're doing. You could sit there and spend hours writing a 30-second promo if you want to do something that's really out of the box and funny,
And the good writing, if you do your writing well, then the production is much easier,
Exactly. Exactly.
I was going to say, we heard a lot of that Houston stuff in the demo I played for you when we kicked off this episode. Love the imaging on that station, but all of your demo work is good. On the website, created a small show notes page, and I put your full demos up there, but they can also go ahead and throw out your website one time for everybody.
Oh, it's Denial Productions is my company. It's DNYLProductions.com. So yeah, anything I do outside the Miami market goes through the Denial umbrella.
And so talk about the, you know, a lot of people are interested. I never specifically ask for dollar amounts. I mean, unless people want to give those, I don't put people in that position. But as far as the, like, let's say you mentioned Detroit, you got, which one was that of Detroit? Channel 95?
Channel 955. Yeah. It's the top 40.
So, you know, they, somebody, I don't know who it is that came to you. Is it somebody within the company or, you know, PD comes to you and says, hey, I want you on this station. Are you still negotiating rates kind of on your own? How are you handling the money element, especially when things are done outside iHeart or inside iHeart?
Well, I don't produce for any stations that are not within iHeart at this point. So
okay, so you are limiting it that way, yeah.
Yeah, it's just a, at this point it would be a conflict of interest with the way I've grown
sure.
within the company and where I am. But still, anything I do outside of Miami goes through my side company. And I have, I'm signed with Nate Zeitz at CESD.
Yep.
So he's the one who handles all the contract negotiations. And we have, you know, we have... rate templates, I guess. It all depends on the market size and how many, you know, elements they need per month and this and that. But I usually don't sign anything less than a year-long contract, so it's a monthly retainer.
Right. And yeah. So obviously, iHeart, I keep wanting to say Clear Channel, but iHeart...
I know, it's tough.
You know, they want you within the family, and that's fine, but they are also willing to treat you as sort of an external contractor and pay you for your services, which is cool, because I think some people... are sort of being asked or told to do other stations, be like, hey, we're already paying you a salary, so you're going to do this. So have you found that a difficult line to walk, or have you found it a very good situation where because you're in the company, you're getting opportunities, but they're still paying you at least fairly?
Honestly, I think it's because I've always been open and honest and just and real about it. I never tried to hide anything, you know, ever since I came. I've been with Clear Channel for 10 years now, and they were always well aware of, you know, side projects. And as long as it never interfered with my day-to-day, then it was never an issue. But, you know, and there's plenty of projects, especially now that, you know, national programming platforms is a huge aspect of what we do at iHeart. And it's kind of consuming sometimes local markets or... you know, residing over it. But it's, you know, there's a ton of projects that I'm constantly doing and being delegated to. So I just don't think, I don't know if it's a respect thing or if it's just how it, you know, how it goes 10 years later. But yeah, I've never actually been approached where it's like, hey, we need you to handle this new station and it's, you know, you're not going to receive any compensation for it. It's just going to be a part of your job. And, you know, that happened in Miami. I came here originally to do one station and it ended up being three over the years, which, you know, that happened everywhere. That's just what happened in radio. But no, I have to say I have no complaints. I mean, the way I've been treated with Clear Channel and iHeart and the respect that they've had for what I do and the amount of work that I put into things is, you know, it's a mutual respect. And I think we've had a great relationship.
Let's talk, man. I know we've all got plenty to do here. We're near that 30-minute mark, but can we keep going for just a few more minutes?
Oh, yeah, no problem, man.
Great. I wanted to talk about your work with Real World. You're urban format director, and you said there's 100 stations or so under your belt, you know, for that format. What is the workload like for that? You know, a lot of people might use a service, and I've brought this up in the past, but they might not really know what goes into making the service such a great one. So how often are you producing elements for that? And do they often mirror what you're doing already for other stations? Or are they more often brand new content that you aren't producing for other stations?
It's kind of the reverse. I'm never really producing content for a local market and then pushing that on Production Vault. It's more so if I'm producing stuff on Production Vault, and then luckily a huge portion of my outside markets, you know, are contracted with Production Vault, whether it's urban or CHR.
Yeah.
So therefore, I'll, you know, it's kind of a time saver there as far as I can use all of these kind of double dip with, you know, everything I'm producing for Production Vault Urban. Oh, I can use all that for Power in Philly this week on the projects I have to do for them. So it's more of a time saver, but we're pretty intense is what we, you know, what we upload a week. I think, I mean, me alone, I produce about, let's see, maybe 14 elements per week for Production Vault Urban. And I have one other producer, Ben Marks, who's in England, and he does about five. So we're almost at 20 new elements of just production a week on Production Vault. And that's not including sound design and drops and samples and all that stuff. So
yeah.
Yeah, it's a pretty intense, you know, platform. It's what they're doing at Real World is definitely higher than anything I've ever experienced with imaging services.
Yeah, there's no denying Production Vault is, you know, I hate to say it as a person who directly competes with them in one format with my own service. They're definitely the top of the heap, and they're the ones to be, you know, competed with. They're the ones to be dealt with. So, you know, just congratulations. It's such an amazing service.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. They're amazing to work with, and I'm definitely, it's been one of the biggest pleasures of my career. I've been with them for about, I don't know, 5 years or so, 6 years, and it's been amazing.
Now I know some people over there at least are producing for multiple formats. Are you producing for multiple formats, or are you just 100% laser focused on ProdVault Urban and you don't do anything for anything else?
Now, Urban is my main focus, but I do do weekly contributions to CHR and Hot AC.
Okay. I always feel like that makes you better. You know, I mean, being like an expert at one thing is good, but dipping into other pools makes you better at the one thing to begin with, I think.
Oh, definitely. And that's what happened. I mean, in going back to just Miami local, when I took over Y100's imaging about 3 years ago, it definitely put me onto a new scale, because I was becoming that urban guy, and that's all it really I was doing and what I was known for. And that just opened up a whole different, you know, platform for me to branch out and expand and pick up more affiliates. And now, I mean, and I love it. And so Top 40 and Urban, I mean, Urban will always be my passion, but I definitely, definitely love Top 40 Radio as well.
Does America by far and away lead in the sort of field of urban imaging, the quality, the content, everything? Or is there anywhere else we should be looking at, as you know, in the world that are really doing some banging stuff for urban?
For urban, I would say yes. It's, you know, with a little bit of combination with some stuff in England. But on the CHR level, I've kind of been blown away. I didn't realize what radio imaging was like in Europe until the past few years. And the stuff I hear I can't even consider it radio imaging, because we're so, you know, brainwashed to think that imaging is one thing here in America and through our careers. But it's what they do is it's music production. It's, you know, it's so far beyond that, and the talent that it goes hand in hand with the fact that over here, it's, you know, there's one guy handling a dozen stations where you're cranking out. I mean, sometimes on a daily basis, I'll produce 40 to 50 elements. Where, you know, I'll speak to some of these guys in Europe and they'll literally spend all day on one element and that's it.
Yeah.
And that's what their
workload
is. Without a doubt.
I learned that over there, and I was just going to say real fast, an example would be, I think, Radio 538, which was the big monster station in Amsterdam when we were there. You know, I believe they had a team of five working on that one station plus, I think, two other smaller brands.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing. So anyway, sorry to interrupt.
Oh, no. Then you're just, I mean, that's exactly, you're just proving my point. That's exactly, it's so different. And, you know, but that all, I guess, goes back to that, you know, American mentality, man. We just, you know, we work too much and, you know, enough is never enough. So
I wrote this down. I don't know that I've ever specifically asked, although you did say, you know, piano lessons as a kid. But in general, what are some of your other passions? What are some of the things you do outside of radio imaging?
Well, I love baseball and football.
Okay, I was going to say either creatively or not, but yeah, okay. Like
creatively,
to play.
You know, honestly, I play the drums. I have a drum. I have a studio or a kit rather in my studio. You know, the free time to play it is just not really there. So I feel like a lot of my hobbies have kind of just fell off over the years, where work has become life. I mean, I'm here 10 to 12 hours every day, if not more. So it's, you know, when I'm not here, I kind of just like to chill out and relax and not be bothered with the stresses of radio, because it's, you know, it can be a lot. It can be overwhelming.
Yeah, 10 to 12 hours every day. I mean, that's obviously big. You said in your studio, do you have a full studio setup at home as well?
I do not. I mean, I have, you know, just laptop set up at home. You know, the goal is eventually we just moved into a new house within the past year. So the goal is to, you know, convert a room into a full fledged, you know, it's always been a dream of mine just to have a badass studio, but I'm not there yet, you know, so I'm in the Clear Channel building here in Miami, and it's great. I have no complaints.
And they let you, I mean, obviously you're working on iHeart products, and, you know, Y and the Beat come first, as you've said, but there's no issue with you being able to produce or do anything you need to do in that studio, that building, whenever you need to do it.
No, I mean, and you know, I do any you know, my production vault stuff I do outside of, you know, normal work hours here.
Sure.
But even if I'm doing, you know, something, there have been days where Miami might be a light day and I'm most of my day is doing stuff for Chicago and Houston or Atlanta or something like that. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's all within the family. And again, at the end of the day, I think it's a mutual respect thing. I'm not, you know, yeah. it's not like I'm ditching a bunch of promos on Y100 to, you know, go to another market and worry about their business. It's to me, you know, I'm super, super anal and I'm super organized, and every single day my entire workload is mapped out. I mean, to the minute sometimes, where I give myself time allotments per project.
I'm sorry. You had mentioned writing and that with these outside stations, you said you don't really, I mean, you don't write it. You produce it, but if you were to write it all too, that would be insane. What about in Miami? How much time are you spending writing the imaging there?
It all depends. You know, Y100 is a promotional beast, so we're constantly doing new stuff. And I don't like to, you know, from time to time, every producer knows you have to just go with, you know, kind of generic stuff once in a while if you're light on time. And, you know, that's when you really make your production, shine, because you know the writing is kind of BS. You know, you got what needed to get out there and, you know, push people to the website for more, and that's that. And, you know, but I actually really enjoy writing. And growing up or coming up in the business, listening to people like Chase and Frost and you know, their writing and their minds are just in another world. So I looked up to them a lot, and I just kind of tried to, you know, from a comedic standpoint, I guess. And when you're really trying to go out of the box, you know, I always kind of think back to Chase and Frost in my head, you know, what would they do, or what, you know, what were some things I remember about them? And, you know, I enjoy writing. The problem is having the time to do it. Cause like we mentioned before, so you could sit there and spend hours on one element, and that's unfortunately not realistic.
Like I've mentioned, time's tight. I got one more major question to ask you. I bring it up to everybody. So I'll just simply ask you how I ask it. If you had one piece of advice for the up and comers in this business, because while they are fewer, they are still there. I meet them. They email me because of my podcast, you know, all the time. I get that 19-year-old in college who loves a passion for imaging. So what is your advice for the young person to be successful in this business?
Oh man, I know, and I was actually going to say that. Are there up and comers? Because I feel like imaging is such a dying breed, which is so sad.
It's rough, but I'll tell you for sure that there are some. I know they exist.
Well, and I agree with that. I have gotten some emails and some demos here and there with some really eager kids that are in college, and I guess my biggest piece of advice would be to network your ass off and, you know, mm-hmm. constantly email as many people as you can and speak with as many people as you can. And don't be afraid to, I encounter, and not just in the imaging world, but just in radio in general, I encounter so many people that aren't willing to move. You know, they expect to just rise up in one market and become a star in that market without really, you know, we all kind of, back in the day, you go from small market to mid market, you work your way up to, you know, a major market. And that's always, you know, the lifelong goal. But, you know, now I feel like, I don't know if it's stubbornness or it's laziness, but that's the big thing. You can't, you know, in order to succeed in this business, especially now when it's so scarce as far as imaging is concerned and everybody is outsourcing and freelancing, I feel like networking and just an insane drive to always be better and just, you know, in a work ethic. You know, you can't be lazy. You can't just expect things to come to you, because it'll never happen.
Yeah, I agree 100%. You know what? Bonus question. It's something I wanted to get to, and I think your opinion on this will be really key. This business, you know, you've already seen it go from, you know, one imager, one station, to one imager, one market, to one imager, six markets. In 5 to 10 years, just generally speaking, where do you see the role of the radio imaging producer in radio in general? What are some of the future? Look at our future. Tell me the future, Steve Dubs.
Oh, man.
Might be
I
a
don't
toughie.
Know. It is. And I guess I have two views on that. I have the scary view, which I definitely think about every single day, is that will this job be relevant in 5 to 10 years? I don't know. I'd like to hope that it is, because I do feel like branding is a huge aspect of what we do. And it doesn't matter whether it's TV, radio, digital, it all comes back to branding.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like there's always going to be a need for people like us. I just feel like, and we've already seen it, just the amount of people that you need in that workforce is just going to continue to deplete.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I mean, I'd like to be optimistic here and say that, you know, obviously radio is pushing more towards a digital, you know, we've seen that with iHeartRadio and with Spotify and Pandora and everything. And, you know, digital is the platform that's is the now, but it's the future as well. But I feel like even so, people, you know, something with local radio, it's, you know, people grow up with it and they resonate and they connect with it. So in with that comes, you know, the fun part of a radio station, the backbone. I like to think that imaging is the backbone of the radio station. You know, you can go on a market and four stations are playing the exact same music. So yeah. What's going to separate one station from the other? It's going to be the personality, it's going to be the jocks, and it's going to be the imaging.
Yeah. I agree.
So, you know, optimistic here. I'd like to say that it's going to continue the way it is. Some things might change as far as, you know, whether it's local or whether it's national. But, you know, I'd like to think that the imaging director is has a life ahead of him, and it's not on his way out.
Awesome. Steve Dubbs, man, you're awesome. You're the man. I appreciate your time. I know you've
got
78 other things to do now from Miami and elsewhere. Let's see here. DNYLProductions.com, denialproductions.com. That's how they can reach out to you. They can see or hear, see, I guess, also.
Yes, sir.
I didn't get to mention your voice work specific. I apologize for that. I will post your demo on my site on the show notes page, but you are available for voiceover also, and you do stellar work, and they can hear that as well.
Appreciate that. Yep. And it's a new bar. I got barter deals now through Premiere, so. Just saying, plug, if you don't have cash, we can go barter.
That's great. I know a few others that are doing their barter deals through Premiere, and it's a relatively new thing that they're doing for some of their larger talent, so that's good for you. Good to hear.
Yeah, hopefully it all works out.
Yeah, great. All right, Steve, thank you so much, and we'll talk to you again soon. Appreciate it, man.
Thank you, man. It was my pleasure.
Just wanted to jump on real fast and say again, thank you, Steve. Amazing stuff. And a lot of respect to Steve from me. And some big episodes coming up, but you already heard that at the beginning of the show. So RyanOnTheRadio.com, if you want to hear Steve's full-length demos, they're posted on the show notes page. You can also go to DenialProductions.com. It's DNYLProductions.com. You can check out Steve's stuff there. Hire him or try and hire him, but I can't see how he has any more time to do anything. What else was I going to say at the end here? Oh, I get emails every once in a while. I kind of mentioned there at the end, you know, there are still young people that are really excited about this business. And, you know, it's possible that people won't be 100% radio imaging production down the road. You know, we don't really know what's going to happen. It's possible that everything will swing back to the old days and you'll have a lot more talent being utilized because that's the way radio will survive with more creative. Who knows? We'll see. But if you ever want to get in touch with me or you want more information on something I did in a show or someone I spoke to, my email is always wide open to be used. The easy one is just ryandreen@gmail.com, but I do have the contact box on my page, and then my email address is also right there. So feel free to reach out to me anytime. I do appreciate it when you do, and I will take the time to write you back, whatever it is you're writing about. It might take me a little while to get back to you, but I certainly will do it. So that's it. I'll be done. Until next time, bye.
Contact the show, contribute your opinions, see additional content, or simply stay connected at producerspodcast.com.